Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a highly respected and heart-centered stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. After enduring 16 grueling years of chronic pain and illness, she healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with guiding others in her signature one-on-one coaching program. With support, consistency, and accountability, clients learn to get out of their pain and heal their symptoms for good. Now, Jeannie has something special for you, a brand new free training. Start your journey with her 24-hour stress detox. It's a powerful mini course designed to give you a simple but effective reset. In less than 15 minutes, you'll gain evidence-based tools and step-by-step guidance to complete your own stress detox. Stress, as we often discuss on this show, is a major contributor to TMS symptoms that impact your well-being in your relationships and your career. If you're sick of feeling like this, then you deserve that detox. If you're ready to begin, check out the show notes and sign up for immediate access. Welcome back to the show. It is Wednesday, November the 20th. Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I recorded a killer podcast yesterday with a listener, Gabby, and I went to go do the editing and the publishing, and the file was nowhere to be found. So apologies to that. We are re-recording on Friday, and so hopefully the one I'm recording now works. It's interesting because I look at my levels. I look to make sure that the timer is counting down. There's been almost 350 episodes or maybe more of this podcast. That has never happened, which is crazy because one of the shows I used to listen to like 10 years ago that I love so much was the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast. And I remember this same thing kept happening to him with the same recorder, except for he wasn't hitting record. You got to press the record button once, and that allows you to monitor your levels. And then you press it again, and that actually is what starts the recording. So I pressed it twice. So if I talk for the next 10 to 20 minutes and this thing did not record, there's going to be trouble a-brewing. Speaking of trouble a-brewing, here in the Pacific Northwest, we keep getting a warning. And I've never had our utilities company send me a message ahead of time to say, hey, there's a big storm coming. I think it's called a bomb cyclone that is supposedly going to hit us tomorrow. And I didn't know if we would have any power, so I thought I would get ahead of that and get this episode out to everybody. So there were a couple of things that really caught my eye that I wanted to chit-chat about here for a few minutes. So how are you meant to stop feeling and thinking about a symptom that happens every second of every day and no distraction is big enough to stop me from feeling it? So there is a really great section of the TMS Wiki course that Alan Gordon did. It's also in his book about somatic tracking. To me, this could be your anecdote because I think that the problem is that you're feeling and thinking about the symptom because you're trying not to think and feel the symptom. So whatever that symptom is, you didn't say what it was, but let's say that it's back pain. Let's say it's lower back pain. You're doing everything you can, gritting your teeth, all of that to likely try and not think about it. And that is the worst thing that you can do. I saw this TikTok recently that kind of reminded me of this, and it was from a sleep doctor, and he had been asked, hey, you know, what's the best thing to do when I'm laying there in bed and I'm trying to fall asleep and I keep looking at the timer, you know, it's 3 a.m. or whatever, and I know I have to be up at 8 and I'm just counting down, okay, now I only have 5 more hours of sleep. I have to fall asleep in the next 10 minutes. And he had said, the more that you can sit there and just reserve yourself and say, I'm not falling asleep. I don't want to fall asleep. I don't need to fall asleep. That you will eventually fall asleep. I thought that was so interesting because it works the exact same way. And God, what is the quote? That you resist persists or something like that. I think this is exactly the same thing. So again, whatever the pain is, whether it's your back or your foot or your knee or your ankle or your wrist or whatever, just zero in on that. It doesn't have to be for a long period of time, but if you can spend a minute or a couple of minutes sitting there without judgment about thinking about that spot, feeling that specific spot, regardless of how much it hurts, that's really what you need to do. In silence, eyes closed, lights off, whatever is most comfortable for you, where you can spend 1 minute of complete and utter attention, undivided attention on this one spot, that's going to be most helpful for you as time rolls on. So that's going to be my suggestion, what I would say. This comes from How to Heal Chronic Pain. That is Scott Stiles' Page, recommended follow. Go check him out. But how about personality traits like perfectionism and how it is a personality trait that can put a brain on high alert and make us feel chronically unsafe, which dysregulates the nervous system and can cause mind-body symptoms. This is interesting because the podcast that I recorded with Gabby was almost entirely about perfectionism. So let me tell you how this works. If you have a personality trait of perfectionism, meaning everything that you do must be of the highest degree possible, it makes me think of, it's not related to TMS, but one of the girls that I coach wanted to play goalie, really, really wanted to play goalie this past season. She did some goalie two seasons ago. And then this season that just ended a couple weeks ago, really, really wanted to play some goalie. We give everybody the opportunity to do whatever they can. She broke her finger second week of the season, couldn't play goalie. So we go, I think it was 4 to 6 weeks to heal. Once we got to the end of that 6 weeks, we gave her a crack at it in practice. Let's see how it goes. And she gave up a few goals and she was really upset about it. And I'd said, why don't we do another week of practice and you're going to be okay. But she was in tears before that. And I talked to her mom and she said the exact quote from her child was that we expect perfection. And no, we don't expect perfection. We expect effort. But not perfection, because nobody's going to be perfect. And that's a huge issue with the TMS community, is that people with a perfect, and I don't really have much of a perfection attitude, at least I don't think I do. But there's lots of people that do. So here's where it can make you feel chronically unsafe. If you always expect perfection, meaning that you're a student that only can get an A+ grade, and anytime that there's a potential threat, meaning you're studying something that you don't understand, or you're taking a test where there's a question that you think you got right, but you're not quite sure, this is always making you feel chronically unsafe. There's a quote in sports and in athletics that it is much easier to get to the top than it is to stay at the top. And that sort of works with perfectionism too, because when you're a little kid, if you're really, really good at something, you may not even know that. There's adults around you that are telling you you're really good, and then your peers start telling you how good you are. But I would argue that a lot of really, really young children don't know whether they're really good at something or they're not really good at something. It comes from the conditioning around them. So then you become an adult and you're super good at something. You always hit 150% of your quota and you're a salesperson. This is firsthand experience. 150% of your quota and you're a salesperson. Now all of a sudden you start in a slow year. So now you are feeling chronically unsafe because that norm, that baseline that you've had for so long of 150% is now threatened. You might only be 120 or 100 or 80 or whatever the case is. And to people with perfectionism in their DNA and their blood, and this is who they are, that is a very impossible thing to try and turn back. And so that's how it makes people feel chronically unsafe, is that they have an expectation of perfection and they've always had that and now they don't have that. So how can you deal with it? And I understand that. And I think that really, and I know that in Sarno's books, he talked about not needing to change your personality. But one thing that really just jumps out to me when I think about situations like that is, like, I think that there's some give and take. And I think that sometimes you have to be able to be okay with straying away from what seems like it's your baseline personality. Though I don't consider myself a perfectionist, and I don't think I ever really was much of a perfectionist, I did have a very, very high expectation of myself in sales. And an example was, like, and I've told this story before, but 2015, I had the year of my whole career. And then I started off very, very slow in 2016. And I really didn't pick it up until June or July of the next year, and then had a blistering second half and ended up making President's Club and made my goals and things like that. But I still didn't do quite as good as I did in 2015. That is the straw that broke the camel's back for me. That was the thing that nearly crushed me. My TMS symptoms began as perhaps a byproduct of what was going on in that year. I saw my shoulder surgery that year, and I got diagnosed with C. diff that year, even without having a test, right? So kind of all these things really started to come down, and I felt like the dominoes were really, really falling in my life. And I think that a big part of it was not being able to cope with what was a benchmark or a baseline for me. If you take that 2015 year out, 2016 looked great compared to any other year in my career. But because I had a new standard for myself, which is really not fair to anybody, and I have cognitive dissonance about this topic a lot, because I think that it's fine for professionals to strive and want to be really good at something, But I think that that's also the antithesis of like being human, because humans make mistakes, and to expect to be flawless all the time is really not, it's not reasonable. It's not a reasonable ask. So, oh gosh, the neighborhood kid is coming over. I had to turn my, there we go. Just rang the doorbell and I silenced it just in time. I can't, I'm hanging out with you people. A conversation I was having recently with somebody was around properly processing anger or properly releasing anger. And first of all, let me let you know that there is no proper to any of that. It's really your own individual experience. And that's really what this is being able to experience anger. The concept that I think of with this is a term that I call no selling. Let's talk about it. So I heard this quote at one point in time, and I wish that I could remember where I saw it or where I read it, or who knows, maybe I even came up with it. There was something that I read once that was talking about the only way, if you're truly experiencing a feeling, nobody around you will be able to know, meaning you can basically poker face it. So for instance, if you're sitting there in a sort of a meditative state, or you're doing somatic tracking or some of the other things that I talked about a little while ago, if you're doing any of those things and people that are walking around you would know, that means that you're probably not really feeling that feeling. And let me be really, really clear about this. Sometimes this might mean crying or weeping or whatever, but I think oftentimes it's a somatic sensation. So you might feel it in your stomach, or you might feel it in your chest, you might feel it or whatever. I'd urge you to probably start with the area that hurts. So whomever, whatever area, don't say where the symptom is, but wherever it is that hurts, you've been bedbound. I would say starting there and just seeing what comes up and what other parts of your body you start to experience sensations in. Then nobody around you should be able to see anything, should be able to see you sweating or see you going through this. It should be something that is a complete experience that only you are going through. And that's why I used to use these terms interchangeably between somatic tracking and somatic experiencing. And I know Peter Levine does the work with somatic experiencing, and it's kind of a different thing, but you have to be able to really experience it. And so that's what I would say. One thing that also comes to mind that I've been thinking about a little bit lately, especially with an interview that you'll hear next week, is around the fragility of the body. So people, athletes, a lot, this happens with athletes a lot, but definitely happens with people that are not athletes too, but ultimately feeling like the body is fragile or the body can be hurt in some way. Of course, there are instances where it can be hurt. We're talking violent car crashes, we're talking assault, we're talking a lot of other things, but ultimately things do heal. And a lot of times these TMS type stories that come is things that are, I lifted up a kid out of their crib, or I reached up and I grabbed something out of a cupboard, things that should be benign. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of people, they become scared and frightened of daily life. And so what sort of messaging can be had or discussed to help aid in those sorts of things? What is it that you want to do? And what is it that you're not giving yourself permission to do? Is it going on a walk? Is it going running? Is it just going to the grocery store and being okay with it? So I think that those are the kinds of things that you really need to think about, and make sure that it's something that you enjoy, because you're not fragile. The body is not fragile. It is incredibly hard to get injured doing something. We see people all over the world in all sorts of sports that have these incredibly violent collisions with other people that then get up and continue their sport, and then they're fine the next day. So the body is not fragile. And I know that people that have kind of gone through this TMS thing, they kind of get a inkling, or they get a thought or a notion that the body is very fragile, but I'm telling you that it is not. The tensile strength in bone, but also in muscle tissue and other soft tissues, is incredibly strong. So I want to keep that in mind. Maybe the last one. This is from the TMS Mind Body page. Does everyone journal? No, everyone does not journal. But a lot of people do, and it's very, very helpful. And I think that the people that it's very helpful for are the ones who have really buried a lot of stuff. They have shut down their mouths and not given their opinions, and they can't bring themselves to say things in their head about other people or situations or things that make them angry or whatever the case is. So being able to write that stuff out and kind of get a separation between the brain and the paper is a big piece of the equation. People that have not alexithymia, but people that have a real resistance to like sensations in their body and being able to do the tracking of that, that's a necessity. Journaling for them can be the one of the most useful tools in the world. So I hope you guys keep those things in mind. I'll be back the next couple of weeks with interviews. I'm recording two this week, if hopefully this one that I'm recording right now works. And hopefully I don't need to go get a new recorder because I do really like the one that I have. So hope everybody's having a great week, and I will talk to you soon.